Now, it's The Six with the Jeff Calkins Show.
Joined now by John Martin. John Martin, of course, is the is half of Jason and John, 11 to 2 every single day. I am a listener. You should be a listener as well. He joins me now. John, you better today?
Every day is the same. But what's going on?
So, not to tear back off the veil, but last night I was embarked on a run, and you called me. And you basically said it's the end of the world as we know it. And no matter what I tried to do to inject optimism, you batted it away. You were at the lowest of low. You were wallowing in despair at our future, at our economy, at everything that you have with your bare hands constructed of your life. And it was, I tried to pick you up, but when you're in this place, you can't be picked up. Where are you now?
I'm the same place. I mean,
what's your theory? What's your theory?
Well, my theory is that we're screwed. I mean, that it is what it is, but
why?
You know, we slept it. I mean, let me count the ways.
But what,
you know?
What threw you into this misery? Like,
I mean,
I was holding on,
and we're flattening the curve, but we're not flattening the curve. It's not real.
Flattening the curve.
No, it's a very slow flattening of the curve. And I just don't really have faith that we will continue to do it, I guess. I don't really have faith that it will last. And so, no, I mean, I'm not the, you know, if you're looking for hope, man, I would suggest, what's that? The 700 Club. But I will tell you the truth.
Yeah.
Last night before we went to bed. As you can tell, I'm very much not a faith guy at all.
You sound actually like you are physically still in bed. Are you?
I am still physically in bed. Yes.
Yes. Isn't it amazing, Jeffrey, how you can tell where someone is in their house now? We've gotten to the point that we can tell where they are in their house just by, you know, ambient surrounding, whatever. So, you know,
I also think. Don't you think when you're laying down, it's like you and I've discussed this.
I'm not laying down.
No,
I'm not,
I don't.
Like,
yeah,
laying.
He's in his bed though. He's got sleep in
I'm
his voice.
I'm sitting
still.
Up in the bed. I'm sitting up.
Right. Yeah, I think that's right. At least you're not in the bathroom. That's good.
But
although
I will tell you,
Dodge, you can do some good thinking there.
Right. Go ahead. Yes. So you're not a faith guy.
Uh-huh. At all.
Yeah.
Hasn't really helped me much in the past, but you know, last night before me and my wife went to sleep. I held her hand and I asked her if she wanted to pray. And so we prayed together, I think for the first time since we've gotten married. It's possible we prayed when we got married, but it was in Spanish, so I'm not sure.
Does she speak Spanish?
No, we got married in Mexico.
I'm sorry. Yeah, I was there. I forget.
It's possible they said a prayer for us, but
see,
like I
right.
said, it was
but
in
it wasn't
Spanish.
A big,
so
right, exactly. Right.
I'm not
right.
sure exactly. So for the first time since we got married, you know, we prayed, and I don't know if I was good at it or what.
Is she a faith person?
Oh, for sure. Yeah, she was an expert. She's an expert in praying.
She's an expert. Does she pray without you? Has she been praying the whole marriage without you?
Yeah, it sounds as though that is the case. Yep.
Behind your back?
Huh?
Behind your back?
Yes. Yeah, because I asked her. I was like, I don't know what to say.
Wait a second. Does she go to church?
No, she doesn't.
But she comes from
an Italian family that's obviously very, you know.
So does the family go to church?
Her grandmother does, or did.
Okay, but her mother and father don't?
I don't think her dad does. You know, her dad was Serbian, so it's a little different. He gave me a Serbian faith like bracelet or something like that.
Let me ask you, how'd you go about praying? Where were you when you prayed?
We were in bed, same spot I'm in now when I'm talking to you.
Lying down? Did you get on your hands and knees?
Yeah, I wasn't on my hands. I didn't get on my hands and knees. I felt like a little much.
Did Did you ask for something? Was it like Amazon in the sky for y'all?
I said, Lord Jesus. No, I didn't ask for anything.
You did?
No, it's not Santa Claus.
A lot of people think God is Santa Claus. That's exactly right. They ask for things.
I mean,
as opposed to, here's what you should ask for. You should ask to know his will and to be able to know his will or her will, know God's will, and to and have the strength to carry it out.
For the record, it doesn't hurt to ask.
Jeffrey suggesting you assemble a list, like you can have
just
an Amazon. You can have a wish list, right? Something like that. You can do that.
No, I mean, I think the reason I did it is because I don't really know what else to do. Like, I don't know what else to do.
Well, I'll tell you this. So when I was running, I was hearing this doom scenario that you were playing out. And I was thinking to myself, well, I've heard this before from John many a time over many things, even pre-pandemic, all kinds of things. You've always, it's over, it's done with, whatever. You have a way of going highs and lows, right?
Mm-hmm.
But what actually had me concerned was when you said, and I don't want to, like, that it was, that it was interfering, and if I can say this, well, I'm going to anyway, with your relationship with Sam. And that's when I stopped taking it. That's when I was like, stopped taking it as just, okay, it's just another thing. Because it's one thing to allow that to spill over into your relationship. I think it's inevitable that you do. You are the person, they are the same person. It's inevitable that you do. But the reason I bring this up is I think people are probably coping with this in different ways. Was it helpful in that sense to... And why
go
does
off
it,
on my wife?
What? No. Why does it? First of all, what's the? How does your worry spill into your relationship with your wife?
I mean, because it's me. So it's not like it's spilling in. It's just like it's what I carry. You know. Sadly, you would think somebody that's been through what I've been through would be able to handle adversity a little bit better, but I'm not. I mean, I'm really just not. I mean, I can admit that. Like, I don't handle it very well. And so, you know, I just jump to these doomsday conclusions. And sadly, you know, I mean, my wife is going to be the one that deals with it because, you know, she's the closest person
to me. Is dealing with it just having to hear about it all the time? Or
yeah,
is dealing
of course,
with it like...
It's not like, yeah, I'm not blaming my wife for bringing over the Wuhan virus, right?
Like, that seems good. Okay, but does it... How about her expenditures? How about family expenditures? Is that where it gets involved?
Well, I mean, you know, yeah, without going into too much detail, I mean, yesterday it kind of flared up like that, but, you know, we also had a conversation, you know, afterward and we set the record straight. I think in another universe, right, where we don't get hit with the pandemic, you know, I mean, she's going to her friend's house and I'm going to my friend's house and we're getting this separation, right? Like, we're getting this very... I think necessary time apart, and now it's just we're on top of each other. You know, I mean, as you know, if you're you know Jason's on top of Faith and his son, and vice versa, and you know Gary and his family, and so I would imagine that every husband and wife, you know, couple right now has had these snippy moments where you know they probably say something that they don't mean, and you know I told Sam I really did. I after it was all said and done, I put my hands on her shoulders and I looked at her really sincerely and I said, "Honey, you're not wrong. You're just not used to being right." And so you know that I think really helped the situation. But everybody,
what does that mean? You're not wrong.
I'm just kidding. I'm just making a joke. I didn't do that. I do think everybody right now is kind of going through situations like that, and I think it's natural, you know, maybe not as extreme as mine, but I mean, I think it's, you know,
a lot of people would say you're lucky. You have two jobs. You've kept both of your jobs. You've got savings in the bank. You have another income with your, and you have no kids. You have no debt to speak of. You've got obviously a dog who loves you,
actually.
And Tony. You have two dogs, one good one and one not as good one.
Correct.
And
you nailed that one.
Life is good. You're lucky.
How
about the whole gratitude thing? Try gratitude, listing the things that you're grateful for.
So that's
like
your
friendship with me.
A great point, right? That's a great point. I just feel it's inevitable that it all goes away.
That's exactly what happens. You have this doom thing. I actually wonder, you say it's because of, you would think that going through what you went through, alcoholic father, all of that, growing up the way you grew up, that you'd be able to be more resilient. I actually think, and I'm not, listen, I am an epidemiologist, but I'm not a psychotherapist, but I actually think that it probably works the other way. That you sort of have this PTSD about things not working out and the inevitable bad things happening, and so you assume more bad things will happen.
I think I have real trauma.
I think that's true. I think it is trauma.
Yeah, I think I have real trauma. Because I never felt like I was supposed to have anything.
Well, plus there was a time your mom walked in with you on you and Cookie.
No, it was not Cookie. Sadly, me and Cookie actually were able to kind of do what we did.
Okay, that's fine.
I'm glad for that.
You had you had real trauma, and you weren't able to. Yeah, you assumed you're not good enough. Like, you're not supposed to have anything.
Yeah, it's like I really do believe this. If you grow up, with what you want, right? If you have a great upbringing and two parent household and if you wanted to get a video game system or you wanted to go to, private school, you could do that, right? You go through life feeling like, man, things are just going to work out for me. They always have, And I think when you go through what I went through as a kid, which, and again, I'm not trying to say my upbringing was any different than a lot of kids, but it just was my experience. Single mom, raising us on credit card debt. Anytime anything minor went wrong around the house, it was like a crisis, man. It was like the freaking COVID-19 pandemic. It really was on a very, on a smaller scale. It was just, that stat about Americans not being able to afford a $500 expenditure, that was what I lived. Something went wrong with the car. I mean, the margin of error in our household was just so ungodly razor thin that I just don't feel like I'm supposed to have what I have. That I don't feel like I'm supposed to, and that I do feel like I'm one banana peel away, right, from not having it. And so, when we're going through this, this pandemic that we are going through, like my first, obviously I understand that, that's secondary. I want people to stay safe and I want people to live and not die. But then you start thinking about the other side of this thing and the fallout, how much of a fallout is there going to be? Are we going to be in a depression? What does that mean for, because I've worked hard with a lot of help, by the way. To build whatever career I have, and I don't think I was ever supposed to have this kind of career, and I just feel like it's going to get taken away from me, and I don't know how I'm going to put it back together. And so that's just that's kind of the thinking that I have sometimes, right? Like yesterday, I was in a deep dark place, and then today I'll be fine, and then I'll probably go through it again. And I hate that cycle though. It's a traumatic cycle and it takes a toll on me. And unfortunately it does seep into other parts of my life.
Well, I appreciate you sharing it. 'Cause I think a lot of people are going through stuff, honestly. And I do think like people who can buy, I will say the only part that people who have the life that was different than yours, that was more comfortable with yours, I would dare say probably have their own psychological, no one grows, I don't think, unscathed from their own psychological scarring, but yours is very real, obviously, and is, and I think it helps to share, because I think people are going through a lot of stuff in their relationships now, and I was talking about this, I was on a Zoom session meeting with my church the other day, and we were talking about how do you deal with anxiety, like, is there a way that we as a church can deal with anxiety, and someone brought it up, and I said, I think just naming it is helpful, and speaking it out loud.
I mean, I think it would really do be good to talk to somebody, like talk to a therapist and like to just really like, but is a therapist going to just sit there and say,
That's not what they say. They don't just sit there and say,
I'm just saying, like, I mean, I'm going to pay for it. I mean, I need somebody to like, give me a little bit of insight.
I've had a lot of therapy over the years, and the one thing therapists don't do is say, But the frustrating thing that they don't do is they don't
tell you what you want to hear?
Tell you. Well, they don't tell you what you want to hear, but they also don't tell you the answer. Like, some of it is listening.
Yes.
And is you figuring it out and helping you figure it out. It's not like, okay, John, you go, here's a list of things to do now. That's not it. You know, that's not generally what therapy is like. But anyway, I appreciate you opening up about it. Because you are an expert.
All right, man. Yeah, you've opened me up. Now what?
John, my mom just texted me, and she thanks you for sharing as well.
Yeah, I've actually had people literally text me during this saying, I'll talk to him off the air. So people want to help, John.
I'm not trying to call
1-800-JEFF here. And
I realize that in the middle of like what we're going through, this sounds really selfish, right? Like, and I don't want it to come off like that, but it's just like, I have these thoughts like about everything. Like it doesn't even have to be a pandemic. Like I just,
oh no, like, I'm deeply aware of that, John. It does not have to be a pandemic.
Like
2 days before you got 2 days before you got the job with Jason and John, you basically were thought your radio career was over. Anyway,
well, yeah, like you know, we get a bad month of ratings. Open up the window, I'm jumping out. You know,
exactly.
Right. I mean, it's that bad, sadly.
Okay, so easy segue from there to Memphis basketball recruiting. You had the original Landers on yesterday, the father.
Yes.
What's your expectation that he will play this year? And what is your expectation that if he doesn't play this year, he won't even hang around for the next year? Would he?
Yeah, so, okay, so that's obviously a two-part question, so I'll take the first part first. I do think there's a chance based on the reporting that we've seen, right? We've seen reporting from Kendall Rogers, who covers baseball. And Kendall Rogers said that there is expected to be a vote on this, on the one-time transfer waiver going into effect this year on May 20th. It would go into effect this year, and it would pass, is the expectation. So, I mean, it's not like this is, you know, a long shot based on the reporting that we've seen. Now, is it a likelihood? I mean, who knows, right? I guess there's a chance that the vote doesn't happen. I guess there's a chance that, you know, the NCAA says, we don't even know on May 20th if we're going to have a season. What are we talking about transfer waivers for? So, you know, there's a chance that, you know, you don't have a vote. And if you do have a vote, there's a chance it doesn't go through. To the point of, does he stay if he has to sit out? I mean, I have a hard time believing that, not because of anything that he said, but just because they've already sat out a year. You know what I mean? I mean, you're having to sit out 2 years. You only played one because he took an academic year that first year in Virginia Tech. I mean, if I'm him, I'm like, okay, well, I'm you know, 20, 21 years old. Like, I can just go, you know, try to make some money. You know, I mean, I average 15.5 points a game. I can go to the G League, get a two-way, try to do some of that. I mean, I'm a big guard, so. You know, I do worry about that. I mean, it could be like a Rajon Tucker situation, but obviously we won't know until late next month.
In terms of who else might they add, obviously Musa Cisse is still on the radar. Where are they with him?
Yeah, I mean, I think they're in, you know, pretty good shape. I mean, obviously he's a total game changer defensively. I mean, that's he would make an even bigger impact than James Wiseman on that end, right? He wouldn't be the offensive weapon, but he'd be such a monster defensively. I mean, that guy, I mean, I love his game, man. Like, he is just like I said, he's a game changer, and I think he raises the ceiling, you know, for Memphis. You know, right now I think they're a tournament team, right? I think they're provided Landers Nolley is eligible, I think they're a tournament team. If you get Musa Cisse and you add him to the list, that is a Sweet 16 team, you know, and I think it's the most talented team in the AAC. So, you know, obviously LSU took a big over the weekend, so you're probably more worried about Florida State than anything else. But, you know, there is some confidence around the Memphis program they can get him. Not everybody agrees necessarily, but there is some confidence in the Memphis program they can land him. And he's going to reclassify. He's, you know, got one class left. It's going to happen. It's just a matter of, you know, that decision where he goes. Memphis needs him, and I think they'll make that pretty clear.
There's been some other names kicking around of transfers. Have you seen other names, or are you aware of other transfers that they are in on?
Yeah, I mean, there's some other kids, like a kid from Gardner-Webb.
That guy, yeah, that kid.
Yeah, Jose Perez.
The big guard, right? Is that him?
Yeah, I mean, you know, you have to, you have to plan, right? You have to plan for contingencies. And so I think that's kind of, I think right now the majority of the focus is on Musa, right? Like, we're getting him reclassified and getting him to choose Memphis. And then everything else is basically just, you know, contingency kind of stuff.
Thoughts on Tyler?
I mean, he was vital. I mean, he was vital to Memphis and Penny Hardaway, you know? Some people might disagree that the Penny Hardaway era has gotten off the ground yet, but to whatever extent that it has gotten off the ground, I think a large part of that is because that first recruiting class and included Tyler Harris. I mean, you got to remember, you know, I mean, the final years, the only reason that Josh Pastner got any local kids in his last 3 years is because he hired the father of those Memphis kids. You know, I mean, Keelan Lawson to get Diedrich and KJ. Other than that, he was not getting Memphis kids anymore. You know, 2014, he didn't have any Memphis kids. 2015, he only had a Memphis kid because he hired Keelan Lawson. And then he wasn't going to get Jalen Fisher in 2016, right? So you got 3 years of that. And then you got Tubby Smith, you know, who I'm not sure he even knew that there were good players in Memphis. He didn't get any. And so you had 5 years, basically, of, you know, just a total disconnect from Memphis and Memphis basketball players in the city. And so, you know, that first recruiting class for Penny was, you know, it was absolutely crucial in, you know, reestablishing that pipeline. And, you know, it'll be tough, right, in 2021 based on, you know, what we know about Kennedy Chandler and if they're recruiting Jonathan Lawson or not. But, you know, I think 2018 helped make the 2019 class possible. And so I wish Tyler very well. I mean, he had some big moments. He's a great kid, and you know, he's from Memphis, so he'll always have my support.
And where do you think he's going? I talked to Frank yesterday. I know you you gave Frank my number. I appreciate that, John.
I give a lot of people your number. I tell them to prank call you constantly.
Yeah, exactly right. And he called me to thank me for my column on Tyler, and I thanked him for Tyler and the pleasure of covering Tyler for 2 years. He said 18 schools have reached out, but totally unclear as to what to do next. And mid-major is in the picture as one of the possibilities. Mm-hmm. But a lot of the places that had recruited him previously are involved. Where do you see him fitting?
Wow, Calkin. Sounded like a recruiter reporter today.
I'm narrowing my list, baby. Yep.
Your final 18?
Mm-hmm.
I think, you know, Iowa State is really trying. So right now I'd probably say, if I had to guess, Iowa State. But, you know, I think it actually might be a pretty nice thing for him, if he decided to go to the mid-major level, because, you know, he would get 14 shots a game like Landers Nolly did at Virginia Tech, you know. So might actually be a good thing for him.
John, thank you very much. We appreciate it.
The Jason and John Show.
The NFL draft is just 1 day away. I know we're all excited about it, looking forward to it. And right now we're going to talk with Radio.com Sports NFL Insider Michael Lombardi. You can catch him on his podcast, The GM Shuffle. It's available on Radio.com and wherever you get your favorite podcasts. Insider Calls is brought to you by the Dell Technologies Small Business Conference Podcast Series, launching May 1st on Radio.com. He joins us now. Hey, Michael, how are you? Thanks for the time, as always.
I am great, thank you. Hope you guys are staying safe. Not too much corky ribs, I hope. Just staying safe, right?
Yeah, that's exactly right. You know, we can get those on the curbside, the delivery, but absolutely. It's going to be a fun time in Tampa Bay now, too. I mean, they don't have corkies, but they do have Gronk. What do you make of that move? I mean, obviously a year out of football for Rob Gronkowski, but we've seen, you know, when Tom Brady and Rob Gronkowski are together and Gronk is healthy, they can be lethal. Do you expect more of that, or do you think they're past their best days? What do you think about that pair now?
You know, I think if we were 2014, it'd be a hell of a move. I'm not sure about it in 2020. You know, Gronk hasn't played 16 games since 2011. Since 2011.
Wow.
And over the last 3 years, I mean, he struggled. Now, in 16, when we came back to beat Atlanta that year, outstanding. And then, of course, beating the Rams, you know, he made the big catch. But that year, he lost a little bit of his lower body. He wasn't quite the same player. He wasn't able to get open against one-on-one. He didn't have the same juice in his lower body. Maybe the year off is going to help him, and I hope it does, because I love the kid.
So
but I've never seen guys stay out a year and get their fastball back.
I'm leaning your way. So you'd still put the Saints there in that division still as the favorite?
Oh, yeah, there's no doubt. I mean, look, you know, I love Tom, and Tom's, you know, one of my all-time favorite people in the world, you know, but the reality of Tom is that he's going to have to do some things that he didn't do last year for the Bucs. Plus, we didn't even talk about the Bucs on defense. You know, do you realize they were 31st in the National Football League in allowing passing yards? Do you realize they had one of the worst red zone defenses in football last year? Of course nobody talks about that because they're talking about the marquee names that they've signed. They've got a lot of work to do. They have no right tackle. Joe Hague's the starting right tackle. I'm telling you, knowing Tom Brady, when he gets in that huddle, if he sees Joe Hague over there, Joe Hague better block pretty good or he's going to be standing on the sideline.
Interesting, yeah. We are, of course, talking to Michael Lombardi. Again, catch him on the GM Shuffle, radio.com, and wherever you get your podcast. Moving on to the NFL draft, any doubts for you at all, Michael, about Joe Burrow?
You know, I love Joe. I think Joe does exactly what we want quarterbacks to do in today's game. They want to win the game with their feet, they got to win the game with their mind, and they got to win the game with their arm, and he does all three. You got to be able to buy a second look in the pocket. You got to be able to slide. Watch the Clemson game. Clemson's playing great defense on them. They're playing as good a defense as you can play until Burrow starts to move in the pocket. Then it becomes a problem, and Clemson doesn't have an answer for that. They don't have enough ways to challenge that, and all of a sudden it opened the court up, and now we've got a fast break game. So I think that was really, really revealing. He makes throws into crowds. He gives his receivers a chance to make the play. I think he's a great competitor. Look, here's the reality. When he was at Ohio State, no one really talks about how much of a competitor this kid is, but he wasn't loved there at Ohio State. And the reason he wasn't loved wasn't because of his personality. It was more to do with the fact that he was a three-star, and Urban Meyer wanted five stars, and he just didn't think he was at the top level of talent. Now, this is a kid who's All-State in basketball 2 years in a row in Ohio. That's hard to do. Ohio basketball is really good, high school basketball. And so he was All-State 2 years in a row. He comes in there. He doesn't really get a chance to compete. They make him live during drills in practice, and Burrow never blinks, never says a word, never flinches, takes the hits, keeps ticking, and just graduates in time and says, I'm going to go down to college. I'll go somewhere else and play.
He's unflappable, and he showed that down at LSU. There's no question about it. With the Skins, do you think they get frisky and trade back, try to get a haul, or do they do the no-brainer move, it feels like to me, and take a Chase Young?
I think they're going to take – I think they'll do exactly what we suspect they'll do is take Chase Young. I don't think somebody's going to come up and just unload a boatload on them, and I think there's obviously – whenever teams say they're open for business means they're not getting any business. It's a little bit like the Maytag repairman. It's not that they're not busy. They're just a little lonely. And I think that's the issue right there. You know, they're trying to get some calls. They're trying to generate some business.
Obviously, this is an NFL draft unlike any other. And, you know, I'm sure there will be technical issues. But do you expect, I mean, is it going to be a busy draft in terms of trades? Like, will that, I mean, I guess how will the – you know, the unprecedentedness, I guess, if you will, of this draft impact maybe the activity of it, if at all?
Oh, I think it's going to – I mean, I think there's going to be a lot of them trades. I don't think you're going to stop them. I think in that 7 to 20 area, I think there'll be teams jockeying around to fill the needs on their board. I think teams are in love with C.J. Henderson. I think teams will try to trade up to get him. Those three receivers are going to have to get declared how the board's going to go. So I think there's going to be a lot of action, and I think ultimately, as you get to the bottom of the first, there's teams that are sitting there at 34, 35 that have the ability to get into the bottom of the first if they can.
Okay, what happens at 5? What do you think the Dolphins do? Is it Herbert? Is it Tua? Do they have to go up? If they do, you figure that involves the Lions. Do the Lions even think about that? What happens with quarterback at number 5?
I don't think they want to give up assets to trade up for, you know, look, Tua is a wonderful player, and I've been on record as saying that, but there's some concerns. He's undersized, he's never run a 40 yet, and he's got durability issues. That's a hard thing to walk into and say, you know, this is going to be our franchise player. Great, great player at Alabama, 32 starts, 84 touchdowns, whatever, 11 interceptions, wonderful career. Not disputing that. That's a lot to give up to do that. I think they're going to surprise everybody and just take the best player. I would not be surprised if Miami took Becton from Louisville, or if they took Wirfs from Iowa, or if they took Derrick Brown from Miami, from Auburn. It would not surprise me if they just took the best big man they could take.
You obviously have reported that that Tua failed two physicals from teams in the past. I mean, in terms of, you know, the league perception of him, you know, you do see the reports about how you know, from certain doctors that he's going to be fine, that there's no real risk. But I mean, if you're making a multi-million-dollar investment, I mean, that's, you know, you're going to have pause. I mean, is this sort of going around the league right now, the real durability concerns about Tua?
No doubt. See, the question people always ask you is, they say, is Tua healthy now? And the answer is, yeah. The question that teams are asking, can Tua stay healthy? And no one can really answer that. Only past performance can answer that. See, it's all how you shape. This is why David Ogilvy was the greatest advertiser of all time. He shaped questions in advertising so that people wouldn't really ask the real question. The real question is, can he stay healthy? Not that can he pass a physical. Can he stay healthy? And the two teams that just took him off the board, they concluded that basically he can't. Now, there's probably some that think he can. I would say half the league thinks he will, half the league thinks he won't. I don't think it'll be uniformed in any way, state of mind. But the question you have to ask yourself as a director or general manager, if I turn this card in and I pick Tua, am I guaranteed I'm going to get an 8-year starter, a 10-year starter, who's going to be able to play 16 games, 60 minutes, and lead my team to a championship? You answer that question. If you get yes to that, God bless you. I can't. I'm getting no to that answer.
You know, you wonder, how much is this pandemic, the fact that he can't get in front of folks, how much would that perception change? Because to your point, you can't answer the question long-term about your durability, even if you're in front of folks. But I don't know, do you feel better about it? Mike Tannenbaum mentioned that he thought because of what, you know, what we're going through, him not being able to get in front of teams, it would hurt him the most. It appears it is. Would you agree that it has? I mean, how many minds do you change if he can get in front of teams?
You can't change past performance. There's a rule in scouting. Past performance predicts future achievement. And you can't change that. Deshaun Watson's past performance predicted future achievement. The Bears ignored it. They took Mitchell Trubisky.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Past performance is, you're not going to get away from. Past performance says he's gotten injured. In a league that's very competitive, but it ain't the NFL. And I know the South loves the Southeast Conference, but let me just say this really clearly. That is not the NFL. They're bigger, faster, stronger. The fact that he hasn't run a 40, if you ask anybody, what do you think Tua runs? They'll all say about 4.7.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he's got to live on movement. He's not tall. He's 6 feet tall. He's got to move out of the pocket. And can he run away from people, will people catch him? And the answer to that is yes.
We are, of course, talking to Mike Lombardi. You can catch him on the GM Shelf of Radio.com and wherever you get your podcasts. All right, man, I know you worked for Gruden or with Gruden back in the day with the Raiders. Any idea what they're going to do? I mean, they obviously have two first-round picks, 12 and 19. What should they do? What do you think they will do? What's your gut tell you?
My gut tells me that they'll pick a defensive player first. I think my gut tells me they could pick a quarterback. I know they all say they won't, but I really think they will. Could it be Jordan Love? Maybe. Could it be Tua? Could be. I mean, let's face it. Besides Burrow, all the quarterbacks that get picked in this draft are going to get redshirted. So the one thing in Tua's favor is he's going to sit out all next year. He's going to be able to get his body healthy. There's no doubt about that. He don't have to play. If he goes to Miami, he might have to play. But anywhere else, he's not going to have to play. So, you know, I think the Raiders would redshirt him, but I think it's C.J. Henderson for the Raiders, and then I think with that second pick, they'll take whatever receiver's left to him.
Right, and the one good thing about this class, I mean, there's more than one good thing about it, but it's just the depth of receiver. You feel like at 19, you'd still be able to get, you know, potentially an all-pro guy there, right, whether it's Jefferson or whoever it could be.
Right, but they got to fix their defense. I mean, their defense, if I went through the numbers of their defense of how bad they were defensively last year, it's appalling. They got to fix that. And offensively, they've got to find a way to make plays when the play breaks down. That's one of Gruden's biggest pet peeves with the fact that why he's not been able to really fall in love with Derek Carr is because ultimately he doesn't feel Carr makes a bad play into a good play, which is what quarterbacks have to do today.
What's Herbert's past performance tell you about him? What's your confidence level in Herbert, and who gets him?
You know, I think Miami gets him. I really think Miami, he's clean for Miami. I think the past performance tells me he's got a lot of skill. Now, we didn't see it at Oregon. The offense was not very good. You know, it was half the field throws. I think the Senior Bowl performance tells me he's got huge upside.
We are, of course, talking to Mike Lombardi again. Catch the podcast, the GM Shuffle, on radio.com and wherever you get your podcasts. Have to ask you, Mike, about the Texans and Bill O'Brien. They have obviously made some eyebrow-raising moves. DeAndre Hopkins is now in Arizona. What do you make of those decisions? Do you think he'll ultimately be vindicated by the end of it? Do they make any sense to you? Where do you come down on what's happened in Houston?
Well, I mean, he gets a breath. I mean, he gets it from everybody, right? I mean, look, you know, the Carolina Panthers trade to get a fifth-round pick for Kyle Allen and can't get anything for a Cam Newton, and nobody says a word about it, right? Mm-hmm. You know, the Jacksonville Jaguars are trading all their guys, but nobody says a word. Bill O'Brien trades somebody who he couldn't sign. I mean, he's been trying to say trade Watson for a while. I had it on my podcast last summer. I didn't use the name, but I basically said there's a top receiver that's available. That was the guy. And the reality of it is I think that Bill's won a lot of games there. And I think Bill's trying to build his team. Is it the way I would do it? Probably not. But I think this whole proof is in the team and how the team wins. And he wants to sign Hopkins. He wants to sign Watson to a long-term deal. He wants to build his team around Tunsil and Watson. And I think he's going to try to do it. Would I have traded for Brandon Cooks? Probably not. I was worried about the concussions. However, that being said, I think he's got a pretty good skill team. He needs to keep rebuilding his offensive line. And as long as he's got Watson, he'll be pretty good. So he takes a lot of heat from people that think they're general managers that have never made a trade before in their life. And sometimes it's hard to make a trade. Like, everybody says, hey, you should have gotten more for Hopkins because he's a great player. No doubt he's a great player. But nobody really has the appetite to pay him $22 million a year and then give you a high draft pick to do it. Mm.
Chances you think the Patriots draft a QB who matters, or does Belichick have his man and his young guy in Stidham?
You know, I think if Herbert were available, I think I could see that. I could see Jordan Love. I think it's all going to depend on how this draft goes and see. I think Bill really never begins with the end in mind. Mm. I think he's going to let this draft go through. But I do think they like Stidham, and I think that whoever they bring in, they think is significantly better than Stidham. That's the answer. See, most people get caught up in new, you know. You're driving a car, and yet you need a new car. The new car is always better. Well, in drafting, sometimes the guy who's new might not be better than the player you have. Oh, you've got to answer that question correctly.
Interesting. And then last thing before we let you go, Michael, and it's obviously I'm asking you to speculate a little bit here, and it's so, I guess, dependent on the world around us. But, I mean, the NFL has been very consistent in the way that they've looked at the world since COVID-19 hit, and they've pretty much been full steam ahead. Any reason that they would not play games at this point, or do you expect that to happen?
No, I think they're going to play games. I mean, I don't know where Kirk Herbstreit was getting his info from, but I think they're going to play games. And I think it might be to stadiums that don't have anybody, and I think the three California teams might have to relocate to play games because the governor of California is not going to have anything. Now, can they play in empty stadiums? We'll see about that, and maybe they can. But I think we're going to have football. I definitely think we're going to have football. Will we have fans? That I'm not sure of.
I mean, if you're the California governor, right, I mean that's a lot of pressure. Is it not? I mean, I know you're trying to do the right thing in your mind, right, for the population, but, I mean, the political pressure he would feel if these three NFL teams are saying, we have to play somewhere else because you're not letting us play without fans, I mean, that would hurt, you would think.
Well, I mean, what I was saying was, you know, will he let them play in the stadium if it's empty?
Right.
I think that's the question.
Yeah. It is.
You know, I don't think we're at a point where anybody's agreeing that there's going to be 70,000 people in a stadium at any time soon, or at least until we get some kind of vaccination and some kind of understanding and wrap ourselves around this.
Yeah. Hey, man, we appreciate the time.
Thank you for this,
sir. As always, Mike, thanks a lot.
Thank you, guys. Bye-bye.
That was Radio.com Sports NFL Insider Michael Lombardi. Insider Calls brought to you by the Dell Technologies Small Business Podference podcast series that launches May 1st on Radio.com. Catch him on the GM Shuffle. That's also available on Radio.com. It's more the NFL draft content you need, right?
Don't miss the Jason and John Show tomorrow at 11 a.m. on 92.9 FM ESPN.